Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Tzadi Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins six lines from the top of Daf Tzadi Gimel. You will notice a Mishnah. Before we begin the actual text, we glance at the side of the Gemara where we have a topic heading, which reads as follows. Adam Nasui Gimel Nashim. A man is married to three wives. Shesach Akol Shoksubosan Oyle Yoser Mishum HaKesef Shishir. The sum total of the ksuba debt that he has to them is greater than the amount of money that is in his estate. Eich mechalkoi, how is it to be divided? The Mishnah. Mishahoya nosui shalosh noshim umeis. A man had been married to three women and died. And of course, in his death, the estate owes money to the ksubas of these three women. Ksubasa shalzu mona, v'shalzu mosayim, v'shalzu shalosh meos. The ksuba of woman one is 100. You could say $100 if it's more convenient than saying 100 zuz, but it's 100 of that particular currency. And the second wife's ksuba is 200, and the third wife's ksuba is 300. And it's pointed out that they were all signed on the same day, so that we don't have an issue of date as establishing an order of priority. The Ein Shom Elo Mona. And in the estate, there is only a mona. You can see that we've used a diamond to highlight the different sums of money in question. So in this case, the total amount that's in his estate is a mona. 100. Cholkin b'shove. The three women will divide it equally, which would mean 33 and a third dollars a person. If there was $200 left in the estate, Rashi points out, let's read this together, the woman whose ksuba is 100, she has a claim only to that first 100. She doesn't have a claim on the additional 100 that constitutes the 200. The shtar, the document that indicates there's 100 owed to her, her claim is only on 100, not on the additional 100. So in such a case, shalmone noiteles chamishim. Now these numbers will be explained later in the Gemara. And I'll tell you right away, on that first 100, you have three people competing. So how is it that one lady gets 50, she should get 33 and a third. The Gemara will deal with that problem. V'shel Mosayim v'shel Shalosh Meos, the two other women that have the ksubas of 200 and 300 respectively, and they are competing, both of them are competing, or we'll say they're on equal footing regarding the second 100 of the 200 that are left in the estate. So that divided in half to two women would be 50 apiece. So those two women, the 200 and the 300, they're going to get 50 apiece of that. So the sum total that they will be getting is shloisha shloisha shelzov. If you include the 25 apiece that they got from the first 100, which we didn't explain yet how they got that, but we're telling you that as a fact. These two women got of the first 100, 25 apiece, and of the second 100, they got 50 apiece. That is 75 per lady. The words of the Mishnah, shlosha shlosha shel zohav, means three dinar zohav. A dinar zohav has in each dinar zohav, there's 25 dinar kesef. 3 times 25 is 75. That's why we wrote in between the lines 75. That's the same as the three dinar zahav, three golden dinars. Hoyu shom sholosh meos. The man left an estate of 300. And we have the same three women. So shalmona noitelas chamishim, the first lady, the lady of the shtar ksuba of 100, gets 50. V'shel mosayim mona, she'll get 100. V'shel shlosh meos shisha shel zahav. Once again, a zahav, a dinar zahav is 25. Six dinar zahavs is 150. Six times 25, 150. At this point in the Mishnah, we're just going to have to wait for the Gemara to explain how we get to those numbers. V'chein shaloisha shetilu lekis. Likewise, three people that pool together money, pichaso ahosiru kach hein cholkin. In terms of any profits or losses, they will divide as we explained. That too needs clarification. Rashi on this says, "Kachin cholkin kol echad ve'echad noitel bischar ve'hefsed lefi mosav." According to the amount that you put into the pool, according to the percentage of money that you put into the pool, thusly you will share in the profits or in the losses. And now we get down to the matter of calculations. Shelmona noiteles chamishim. We said that the in the Mishnah, that the lady who had a ksuba of 100, she gets 50. Now, why should she get 50? Tlosin v'tlosa v'tilsa hu de isla. If anything, she gets 33 and a third. So where did that 50 come from? The Gemara answers, Omar Shmuel. And before we can go further, we have a new marking, a triangle. On the side of the Gemara, we have Hezberom Shel Shmuel V'Ravina. The triangle highlights these names, Shmuel and Ravina. Al Horesha, we have to deal with the Aleph case of the Mishnah. And Hasefa and the Beis case of the Mishnah. Or I should say, more accurately, in terms of presenting Shmuel and Shmuel's points, you'll see how we've marked the Gemara thusly. You have Aleph and Beis in the Gemara. Now the text of the Gemara. Omar Shmuel. You want to know why the lady with the ksuba of 100 gets so much? Bekeisevis balas mosayim lebalas mona, the lady of the 200 ksuba, writes a declaration to the lady of the 100 ksuba, the following, Dinu dvorim ein li imoch b'mona. I remove myself from any contest with you, from any argument of you, from any competition with you concerning the first 100. So once the 200 lady removes herself from the from competing with the first lady of the 100 lady on that first 100, so that the 100 lady is in effect competing with the 300 lady alone. So you have two women competing over that first 100. So at that point, just focusing on the 100 lady, she'll get 50. So our original question was, how is it that the lady with a ksuba of 100, when she seemed to have been competing with three ladies over that first 100 in the estate when 200 was left, how is it that she gets 50? We just explained, because one of the three ladies removed herself from competing with that first lady, with the 100 ksuba lady. We continue in the Gemara. Ihachi, if that is so, that the 200 lady removed herself from the first 100. If we were leave things at that, means she's out of the picture. But is that really so? Aim or seifal? As you continue reading in the Mishnah, you can use the arrows that you see to the side of the Gemara to see what we're quoting from. Just align this with the arrow above. And in the Seifa, in the continuation of that Mishnah, of our Mishnah, it says, Shel Masayim v'shel Shlosh Meos Shalosh Shalosh Shel Zahav. The 200 lady and the 300 lady ended up with a total of 75. How did we account for that total of 75? Well, as far as the second 100 were concerned, so the second 100 was split equally between the 200 lady and the 300 lady. So if you divide 100 between two people, that's 50 apiece. What about the extra 25? So the answer to that extra 25 is that of the first 100, after the first lady, the 100 lady, got her 50, the second 50 was divided equally between the 200 lady and the 300 lady. We have a little starred note on the left-hand side of the Gemara, which shows you how we break down that 200. 100 was broken down by the kuf on the side, on the left-hand side of the Gemara, in our little addition, that by the start addition, the kuf represents the 100 lady. The resh is the two, resh numerically is 200, and shin numerically is 300. So we show how that first 100 is divided up. But 1 second, now the question comes, and that is, if you say that the 200 lady removed herself, then Tamal law, the Gemara continues in the text, Tamal law means let the 300 lady tell the 200 lady, Hasalkis nafshach mina, you've removed yourself. So you shouldn't get any portion of the first 100. You said, we saw 3 lines ago, she said, Dinu dvarim ein li imach b'mona. The Gemara answers, Mishum da omar law, the 200 lady says to the 300 lady, Midinu dvarim hu desliki nafshoi. And here the Gemara is very terse. So we look in the Gemara, in the Rashi, that is. Second line under the Gemara text. Midinu dvarim slikis nafshoi. Lo nasati chelki b'matona. I didn't give my portion away as a gift. Umashi gofsa, that which the 100 lady had collected, lo b'shlichu si gofsa, she didn't collect it, the 50, through my, as an agent of mine, shetoy marli, that it can be said to me, notla zu chelkech, that she took your portion, ani silakti atzmi milorivimo. The 200 lady says to the 300 lady, all I did was I removed myself from arguing with her, umilemayet chelke b'mona, and I remove myself from reducing her portion in the first 100. The govar yoda ligvois chatzia mona b'shribud shtora, and she gained strength. She overpowered. Govar yoda means her strength increased to collect 50, half of the 100, because of her shtar. She had a shtar ksuba of 100, so she has a claim. In theory, she has a claim on the full 100. It's just that she runs into competition. So she successfully collected 50 of the 100. Achshav ani bo lachlok imoch banosar. Now I'm coming to compete with you regarding the balance. Shalosi lakti atzmi milariv imoch. I didn't remove myself from competing with you, the 300 lady. V'shibudi, v'shibudoch shavim. My claim and your claim on the 50 are equal. So, that being the case, the balance, the 50 balance, was divided 25 apiece. Now, let's go back to the Gemara. Hoyu shom shlosh meos v'chulei. And we saw how if you just go back to the markings, the diamonds in the Mishnah. You can see the breakdown of the 300 situation. We had 300 left in his estate. The 100 ksuba got 50. The 200 ksuba lady got 100. And the 300 ksuba lady got 150. We ask, and here we have a little star also. You can align with the star above. Shel Mosayim Mona. The 200 lady got 100 from that estate. But we don't understand that. Why does she get 100? We mentioned that the 200 lady had removed herself. And what does that mean when we say she had removed herself? That means that from the first 100, she got only 25. That's how we said explain things before. And from the second 100, she's competing with the 300 lady. That means that the second 100 would be split two ways, 50 apiece. 25 and 50 is 75. So why does this Mishnah say that the 200 lady gets 100? The Gemara goes on, Shivim v'chamisha hu de'islo. She should have only 75. Now, it's true that 300 was left in the estate, but the third 100, the 200 lady has no claim on that to begin with. So how is it that in that part of the Mishnah, when 300 was left, that the 200 lady got 100, as the Mishnah says, when all that she had coming to her was 75. Omar Shmuel. So now we have another explanation of the, we'll say, of that section of the Mishnah, the section of the Mishnah that dealt with the 300 estate. What happened in that case? Because Seves Balas Shloshmeos Lebalas Masayim Ulebalas Mona, the 300 lady in this case, it's a different case. It's a case of an estate with 300 that was left in it. And what happened there was that the 300 lady had written to the other two competitors the following: Din Udvarim Ein Li Imochem Bemona. Now here we have to point out a difference between the way the case had been set up before when we saw the Din Udvarim with the way this Din Udvarim case is set up. She announces to the two ladies, and here you can see the difference is that here she specifies the two ladies. In the case before, you had the 200 lady talking to the 100 lady. Here, you have the 300 lady speaking to both ladies. She says, I remove myself from competing with both of you regarding the first 100. Well, now that that has been said, so the 200 lady, which was the opening of our most recent difficulty, what's the story with the 200 lady? With regard to the first 100, you only have the 200 lady competing with one other lady, the 100 lady, splitting 50 apiece. The second 200, so that is also split two ways. Between whom, though? Between, again, the 200 lady and the 300 lady. So that is how we account for the 200 lady getting 100. 50 of the first 100 and 50 of the second 100. And now we have a new approach to the Mishnah, the Reisha and the Seifa. This is Ravina's approach. And hence you can see how we've broken down the Mishnah, that is the Gemara, into Roman numeral number 1, which was Shmuel's approach to explaining the Reisha and the Seifa, and Ravina's approach to explaining the Reisha and the Seifa. So Rav Yankiv Minahar Pekoid Mishmei de Ravina Omar Reisha B'shtei Tfisos V'Seifa B'shtei Tfisos. So we've dashed underlined this expression Shtei Tfisos, and we'll show what that means through the Gemara's illustration. we're going to discover it has to do with the monies becoming available, the monies of the estate becoming available in, we'll say, in two sections, in two separate installments. The Rashi explains a little clearer than what I just said. Ravina Omar, let's read the Rashi together in the lower part of the page. Lo sukma b'kiseves, don't set up the Mishnah where one of the ladies was issuing a statement of removal. Elo b'shtei tfisos, shetofsu mitatun l'ksubason, they grabbed hold of portables as payment for their ksuba. That itself is quite a controversy about, first of all, portables of Yisoymim are not available initially as a source of collection, but here we're talking about they grabbed it. They took hold of the portables. You didn't have 200 of falling at one time. Two installments, two grabbings. And how are the numbers broken down? So that's what we'll see as we go on in the Gemara. So Ravino says the Reisha and the Seifa were two grabbings, two installments for our purposes. Reisha, where there was a total of 200, was b'shtei tfisos as follows. D'naflu shivim v'chamisha b'chad zimno, u'me'a v'yesim v'chamisha b'chad zimno. The first allocation or grabbing was 75, and the second was 125. Seifa b'shtei tfisos, the seifa which was a total of 300, was broken down as follows: B'naflu shivim v'chamisha b'chad zimna, u'masayim v'esrim v'chamisha b'chad zimna. 75 and 225. Now, how to understand this, how to break all of this down? So, we have, based on the Rashi, we have charts that accompany this. If we bear in mind that the numbers the numbers that we see here have to tally up with the numbers that we saw in the Mishnah, both in the wherever you see the diamonds in the Mishnah, the diamond around Mosheim and the diamond around Shloshmas, following that you have the breakdown of how much each one got. So if we look at the chart, we see down the side, the right-hand side of the chart, on the left-hand side of the Gemara, we see numbers 75 and 125, the chart titled 200 and Shtei Tfisos. So the 75 and the 125 totaled equals 200. The 75 we've written in the chart is Shayach Lekulam. Is that 75 is broken down equally amongst the three ladies. And the you see the Kuf, Resh, and Shin going across the top of the chart. Once again, our reference is the Kuf is numerically 100, the Resh numerically 200, and the Shin is 300. So of the first 75, that's divided equally. They all have equal claim on that. The second amount, 125. So bear in mind that the lady that has the 100 ksuba, she ultimately can claim maximally, if she had no competitors, how much could she claim of that? Up to 75. She can't claim more than that because she got 25 already. 25 and 75, if she would get the whole jackpot, she'd get her 100 that way. So she's competing only on 75 of that 125. But she has competitors. So the 75 is shayach to all of the ladies. And once again, 25 apiece. At this point, how much has the 100 lady received? So if you go vertically down the kuf column, you see she's got 50, but at this point she's out of the picture. She's no longer in the competition. So we've accounted for 75 of the 125, but that leaves you with a balance of 50, as you can see on the chart. That 50 has two competitors, the 200 lady and the 300 lady. 25 apiece, totals 75 for those two ladies. And these numbers are what you saw in the Mishnah. 50 for the 100 lady, And for the 200 and 300 ladies, 75 apiece. Now, we go to the chart entitled 300 Shnei Tfisas. It's very similar analysis, just adding another stage, as you'll see. The first 75 that fell, they all had equal grabs on that, 25 apiece. Then 225 fell to them. But of that 225, we're going to be breaking it down into a couple of parts. You'll see, as you can see on the chart, first we'll take a look at 175 of that first 225, but that 175 is something that the 200 lady has a claim on. Why? Because she received 25 already. She has a maximum of 200. So that would leave a balance of 175. However, when you're looking at that 175, the 100 lady doesn't have a claim on all 175 of that. She has a claim only of up till 75. She received 25 already. She has a shtar entitling her to a total of 100. So of that 175, 75 of that, even the first lady, the 100 lady, has a claim on. So we break that 175 down as follows. Of that, 75 of that, all three ladies have equal footing. Then you see it's broken down 25 apiece. That leaves, of that 175, that leaves a balance of 100. Now, the first lady is out of the running. How much did the 200 lady receive up till this point? Well, you can look at the chart. Up till this point, before we divide this 100, she's received, the 200 lady has received 50 already. Of this 100 that's left, now, we had mentioned, let's make it clear that when we started with this at this stage, the 175 of that is something that the 200 lady had a potential claim on, the entire amount. Okay, she already got a portion of that after we broke down the 75 three ways. Of that, we now have a balance of 100. Two ladies are competing for that, 50 apiece. Now, at this point, the lady with the 200 ksuba has no further claims. Why not? Because we already presented to her the potential of the first 75, and of that she got 25. At that point that she got 25, she had a maximum claim of 175. And we just demonstrated how we divided that out. But having said that, she had a maximum claim of 175 after we divided the first 75 three ways. The 200 lady is out of the picture. So the remaining 50, which is the balance after we took care of the 175 of the 225, 225 minus 175 is 50. But that 50 it's not up for grabs by any of the ladies other than the 300 lady. So she gets all of that, the 50 that remains. If you tally up all the amounts, you can see the 100 lady got 50, the 200 lady got 100, and the 300 lady got 150. But I hope that it's clear. And if not, you can always, you know, move back the playback button and listen to how we broke things down. Just some of the tricks in this breakdown was to notice that after this first 75 was divided three ways, when we focused in on the 200 lady, she had received 25 of the first 75. At that point, the 200 lady had a maximum claim of 175. And that's how we took care of that second stage of the breakdown. Let's go back to the Gemara. We're going back to the Gemara, four lines from the bottom, Tanya. This source ties in the end of the Mishnah with the Shalosha Shehitilu Lekis and says, Zu Mishnas Rabbi Nosson. Our Mishnah that made a comparison between the division of the Ksubas and three people that pool unequal amounts of money into a joint venture, that's Rabbi Nosson's approach. Rabbi Omer, Ein ani roya dvarav shrabbi Nosson be'elu ela chokos b'shoveh. I don't agree with Rabbi Nosson regarding ksubos, but rather they all divide equally. So that in a case of an estate where 300 was left in the estate, and you had three ladies, but each one with a different ksuba amount, according to Rebbe, let's just assume, like we had in the Mishnah, that the least amount was 100. Those three ladies are going to get 100 apiece. As far as why Rebbe makes this chiluk, this distinction, so Rashi explains that. But for our purposes, we continue in the Gemara itself. Before we continue with the text, we glance at the side, the nosei, the topic heading. Mashkiim shishkiu kasvam biyachad. Investors that invested, that pooled their monies together. Kol echad schum acher, each one a different amount. Ech mechalkim esor vochim. How do we divide the profits? So the Gemara is going to open up with Shmuel. And Shmuel is going to say something that doesn't seem to match what we learned in the Mishnah. And in the course of the Gemara, we'll have to resolve Shmuel's approach to Shlosha Shetilu Kis with whatever our Mishnah had said. Omar Shmuel. Shnayim Shetilu Kis. Two people pooled money together. Zemona v'zemosayim. One person invested 100, and the other person invested 200. The Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis. Haschar le'emtza. The profits will be divided 50 each, 50% each one. There's a very long bracketed section. The brackets are explained by the starred note on the side. So, Graham Lashem Diluk. The reason we have this long section in brackets is for initial skipping purposes. Achrei Sugraim, Gemara Makshimi Mishnah Seno Al Din Shel Shmuel. After the brackets, the Gemara is going to ask from our Mishnah, as we just had mentioned, on Shmuel's Din. On the law or the method of division that Shmuel mentioned. Besocha Sugraim, within the bracketed section, Yofiu Shnei Deis. Alma diber Shmuel, klomar al eizes suk hashka shalom rosh hashkiu schumim shaynim chulkim horevach leemtza. What type of investment was made, according to Shmuel, that even though they invested different amounts, the profits should be shared equally? How do you explain that? Because logically, at first glance, it doesn't seem to be understandable. So just recognize that if we go back to our Gemara text and you skip the long bracketed section, we would pick up, use your bracket length indicator, you can see where that takes you. And by the way, if you're interested in accessing marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Notice then, after the skipped bracketed section, Tanan. And here the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, V'chein shloisha shitilu lekis, Pichasu al siru kachoyu cholkin. Three contributed money or pooled money together, and if there was any loss or there was profit, they would divide thusly, like we saw in the Mishnah with the Ksubas ladies receiving different amounts. My lav pichasu pichusu mamish hosiru siru mamish. The words pichasu hosiru, pichusu means loss, hosiru means profit. Doesn't it mean literally that their investment either suffered a loss or their investment suffered a gain or experienced a gain? And the Mishnah says cholkin. Cholkin means like we saw in the Mishnah, different according to how much you invested. That percentage is how much you will suffer loss or profit from the gain. So the Gemara responds and says, Omar Shrav Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua, lo. The case of Pichas or Siru is not the concept of loss and profit in the conventional sense, but rather Hosiru means zuzi chadati, pichasu means estira detsunisa. In order to appreciate this, we look into the Rashi. Zuzi chadata. Three people pulled money together. If you want to keep things very simple, Mr. 1 put one coin into the pot, Mr. 2 put two coins into the pot, and Mr. 3 put three coins into the pot. Rashi says under Dibor Masel Zuzi Chadati, Rashi that we're looking at is less than halfway down the Rashi column. Shematilim Zuzim Yishonim Venosnu Venosu Bohem. They had put a total of how many coins? It was 1, 2, and 3, is a total of 6 coins into the pot. And initially they put old coins into the pot. And they, in their business dealings, they were doing the sales and purchases or whatever people do in commerce. Ad shenasu chadoshim, v'yoytzim heim b'hoytzah, hilka cholkim l'fi hamois. After exchanging money back and forth, they the quality of the coins, they had put in old coins, and at the end of the day, there were new coins. And let's just assume that the new coins are more valuable. Hilkach cholkin lefi hamois dechol chad mai diyohiv shokil. But so that would mean that, again, keeping things very, very simple, if Mr. One put one coin in the pot, initially it was an old coin. At the end of the day, after all their commercial dealings, they had a total of 6 new coins. So Mr. One gets one new coin, Mr. Two will get 2 new coins, and Mr. Three will get 3 new coins. Avolim hosiru yoyser al acheshbon. If, however, there ends up to be more money in the pot than they initially had put in, that extra, that profit, has char liemsa. So if instead of 6 coins that were put into the pot at the end of the day, they had profit in there, end up with 12 coins, so the profit is an additional 6 divided 3 ways, they'll get 2 apiece. And that is what Shmuel had described. There was the other term was istira detsunisa without reading the Rashi. Those are old coins. They're older than the ones they had put into the pot, and they're practically they're not expendable. Rashi says v'ein yoytzis b'hitzah. They are useful for putting under one's foot that experiences bunions or other foot discomforts. Putting a coin in your shoe under your foot where there's a discomfort provides relief. And that's the term estira detsunisa. So that having been done, we saw Shmuel speaking about profit split down the middle, regardless of how much you initially invested. We saw the question raised from the Mishnah, how the Mishnah said that there would be a prorated distribution, not down the middle. And we explained, the Mishnah is speaking about this phenomenon of same number of coins, how just with a different value to them, then it's prorated. But if there's additional profit, then it's down the middle. Now, we'll go through the bracketed section, Mitzvah Shem. When we finish the bracketed section, then we'll continue with the Mishnah. Before we continue with the bracketed section, however, let us glance at the side. Under our Mivneh heading, you see a diamond is featured. The diamond represents Shtei Deos, two opinions, Al Eizes Sug Hashko, Omar Shmuel as Dvorov. Regarding what type of investment did Shmuel say his Halacha Decholkin Haschar Le'emtza, where the profits would be split down the middle? It's true, we already dealt with this when we skipped the bracketed section. We presented the question from the Mishnah and the response, but in the meantime, we're trying to understand when Shmuel said, Schar Be'emsa, that the profits are split down the middle, what was he referring to? The Gemara. Omar Rabo, Mistabru Milsei de Shmuel, it's most likely that Shmuel's point was Beshor Lecharisha V'Oimed Lecharisha. They purchased an ox that's fit for plowing, and it's then eventually sold as a plowing ox. Then Shmuel says that any profits that they realized from that would be split down the middle. Rashi at the top line, Shor lecharisha shelokhu bohen shor lechrosh v'chorshin bo. V'ein chelkos shelzeh moyel b'loy chelkos shelzeh klum. My explanation really is needs a correction, and that is that they bought a plowing ox and they used it, or they rented it out for plowing purposes, and therefore the portion that one contributed in the purchase of the ox doesn't represent any more significance than the portion that the other one had contributed to the ox. In other words, if I contributed 25% of the ox and the other person contributed 75% of the ox, you can't plow with an ox of which there's only 75% of the animal. It's as good as dead that way. So therefore, the profit is split down the middle. Avol, Rashi continues, Shor lecharisha v'shbiach b'bosir v'shochtu, if they bought a plowing ox and then slaughtered it and sold the meat, realizing a profit from that, that's what the Gemara says on the third line from the top, Avol b'shor lecharisha v'oimed l'tvicha, an animal that was born, that was purchased initially for plowing purposes, but then they decided to slaughter it. So that you have a case, as Rashi says, a chiddush here, that even though their initial purpose was for equal division of profits, but nevertheless, they ended up slaughtering it, and each piece of the animal, each pound of the animal, represents additional income. In such a case, zeh noyteh lefi ma'osav, zeh noyteh lefi ma'osav. If you bought 25% of the animal, so 25% of the meat that's sold, whatever price it fetches, that will be your portion. The fellow that invested 75% of the purchase price, 75% of the meat will be for him. Gemara continues. Rav Hamnuna Omar Afilu Shor Lacharisha Voimed Litvicha Aschar Liemsa. Even in that case, where they initially bought it for splitting the profits down the middle, and they ended up slaughtering it, the division is in accordance with their initial intent of purchase. The triangles that you see, and if you skim down the Gemara, you'll see how they appear in opposite directions. On the side of the Gemara, the triangle is featured. We call this a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the back and forth style of the Gemara. The point facing up is a kusha question. The inverted triangle will represent a response. So the first question, it lasts a couple of lines. We have a long question marking. Meisve, shnayim shetilu lekis. Zemona vezemosayim, two pooled their money together, one pooled 100 and the other 200. Haschar liemtza, the profit is down, is split equally between the two. My love, is it not so that b'shor lecharisha v'oimed l'tvicha, that they bought it initially for plowing purposes and ended up slaughtering it? Utyufta derabo, And this would be a refutation of Rabbah. Notice the markings we have, the dot underline by Rabbah's comment of Lefim Oisov, and here the dot underlined under Lamza, which means down the middle, not proportionally. So Rabbah's defense is that that's not what the Mishnah is talking about. Rather, this Tanaic source, I should say, it's a Brisa, it's a Tosefta, it's talking about a different case. It's Bishor L'Harisha V'Yemid L'Harisha. It's where it was initially purchased for plowing purposes, and that's how they realized the profits. And under those circumstances, the profits are split down the middle, which Rabbah conceded to. Avol, we ask a question, and this is a long question. Avol, shor l'charisha v'yemid l'tevicha mai. But what are you going to say in a case where it was purchased for plowing and it was eventually slaughtered? Are you going to say then, zeh noitel l'fi moisav, zeh noitel l'fi moisav, that it's a proportional division of the profits? Adetoni seifa, instead of the seifa of that braisa teaching the following, lokach zeh b'sheloi, v'zeh b'sheloi, v'nis'arvu. The investors, each one bought a separate animal. One bought healthy animals for 200, the other one bought scrawny animals, ill-health animals for 100, and in the course of time, these animals got mixed up, whatever, they couldn't be so easily identified as time went on. Zeh noitel l'fi ma'osav, zeh noitel l'fi ma'osav. Each one will take according to how much he invested initially. The proportional idea of division. So when, according to this Tanaic source, we mentioned there's char le'emtza, and then we mentioned there's proportional division. When do we realize proportional division? When it's a case of the purchase of, we'll say, multiple animals that are then pulled together. If Rabbah's answer was correct, that in the case of Shor L'Harisha and Oymed L'Tavicha, that then, and in that case there's proportional division, Liflog V'Lisni Bedida. The Gemara's question is as follows. Then they could have made, the Tanaic source could have made a distinction between equal division, which we call the emtza, versus proportional division, which we said is zet lefi moisav vezet lefi moisav, sticking to the case of one animal. And the source would have read as follows, and that's we have a dashed frame indicating what the source could have said, but it doesn't. What could it have said? Vamed vamamurim. When is it that we say that the schar is li'emtza, that this it's equal division regardless of how much was pulled it with how much was put in it the pot originally bishor l'charisha v'amid l'charisha? It was bought for plowing purposes and it was used for plowing and that's how they saw the profits. Aval bishor l'charisha v'amid l'tvicha, purchased originally for plowing but eventually slaughtered zeh noitel l'fi ma'osav zeh noitel l'fi ma'osav. Why doesn't the source then say that stick within the case of one ox purchased, where initially it was purchased for plowing in both cases. Just in the first case, where the schar is down the middle, it's because its eventual profit was realized through the initial considerations of Harisha. And in the case where there's a proportional division of the profits, it's where, as Rabbah tried to tell us, where it was eventually slaughtered and the meat was divided. And sold, we'll say, and the profits were realized through the division, through the sale of the meat. Then there's proportional division. But the source never said that. So is that not a problem for Rabbah? The Gemara answers, Hochi Nami Ka'omar. In fact, Rabbah's approach to the source is what it said. And how do we see that? The following is we'll say the full understanding of the source. Bamed mamurim, when do we say that the schar is li'emtza? Bishor l'charisha, v'yoymed l'charisha, where it was purchased for plowing and they realized the profits through the plowing. Aval bishor l'charisha, v'yoymed l'tvicha, where they purchased, again, one ox with one intention, and it was eventually used for slaughter. Nasa, then it's as if kamisha lokach zebishalovanis arvu. It's as if they had bought, let's say, multiple animals, and there we understand zeh notel lefim oisav, zeh notel lefim oisav, where then there certainly is going to be proportional division. Now we pick up with the Mishnah, because the interim section we already learned before. Mishahoya nosui arba noshim umes. A person had been married to four wives and died. And unlike the case before, here the dates of the ksubos are different. He did not marry them at the same time, rather staggered. Harishoina kudemis lishnia, shnia lishlisha, slisha sorvias. The lady with the first date in the ksuba, she has the first crack at collecting whatever is there in the estate. And potentially speaking, there might be enough money just to cover enough for her. What about all the other ladies? So that's the issue that we're confronting, we're dealing with over here, because of the sequence of dates that results in the sequence of collection. Now, one can easily imagine that, it's an estate with somewhat limited funds. You would imagine then that the subsequent ladies, the ladies with the later dates, might be a little suspicious that the first lady already got money. She got money was earmarked for from some other source other than that which is left over in the estate of the deceased husband. So the Mishnah says, "V'rishoyna nishbas l'shnia." The lady who's going to be collecting first, she has to swear to the second lady. And Rashi adds, if the second lady demands with it, she puts in a claim and says, since you're taking first, I want you to swear to me that you didn't collect already anything from our husband. And because I'm worried that by your taking first, there won't be anything left for me. So the first lady has to swear to the second lady, Ushnia Lishlishis. And the second lady, when she makes her collection, she has to do the same thing with regard to the third lady. And Ushlishis Lurvias, and the third lady, likewise with regard to the fourth lady. For Ravias Nifra Shalobishwa, the fourth lady, when she comes to collect, she's not coming to collect at someone else's expense. Rashi adds a detail, and that is that we're talking about a case where the orphans or the heirs are adults. And there's a concept that we've learned, we've seen elsewhere, and Rashi makes reference to it, that someone who comes to collect from the Nichsi Yisaimim, one who collects from the property inherited by heirs, he collects only upon taking an oath. This is true only when you're dealing with minors, not so when you're dealing with adults. So that the Mishnah here, when it says that the fourth lady, after the first three ladies got their collection, the fourth lady comes to collect from the estate, she need not take a shvua. That's in accordance with that idea that the collection from heirs requires a shvua is true only when collecting from minors. And here, we're dealing with adult heirs. We continue. Ben Nanos Oimer. Ben Nanos is another opinion. He says, V'chim b'neishi achronu niskeres. Just because she's the last one to collect, she niskeres, she profits, meaning she benefits by not having to take an oath. Taking an oath is something that people view with a great deal of seriousness and hesitancy. So why does this fourth lady get off the hook, so to speak? Afhi lo tifra elo b'shvua. The fourth lady must also take an oath that she hadn't received any prior payments. As far as why he says that, the Gemara will explain the machlokus between the Tanakhama and Benanas. Hayo yoytzes kulin b'yoyim echad. If all of them came forth on one day, in other words, all together, they came before us on one day and saying or claiming that they all the or this let's say this teaches us this shows us that all of them were written, all the ksubas were dated on the same day. Well, if they were all written on the same day, if we can demonstrate that one ksuba was written at an earlier hour of the day, she'll have the first claim. And with this in mind, the practice in Jerusalem, in fact, was to record the hour of the day that the ksuba was prepared. If all of them were written at the same time of day, and there's only a mona, only 100 in the estate, chokos b'shava, they will split whatever is there equally. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei mivne heading, a topic heading with a structural note. You'll notice a trapezoid or volcano shape appears. This is explained as Hesberim Loma Chachomim Benanis Binyan Atzora, Hesberim Loma Chloikis, the explanation for the Machlokis Chachomim Benanis Binyan Atzora, Levius Lishova Lenoshim Shalafanel, Bish Eis Gavias Ksubasa, the need or lack thereof for the fourth lady to swear to the other ladies when she comes to collect her ksuba. So the Gemara asks, "My conflict. What is the point? What is the basis of this controversy?" Omar Shmuel. So Shmuel is the first of several explanations. Shmuel says, and we continue at the top of Tzadi Dalid Omed Aleph, top line. Kegoin shenimseis achas mehen sode she'eino shelo. The circumstances in the Mishnah is such that these ladies who collected the ksuba from properties that their deceased husband had left, one of the first three ladies, it turns out, took a field, received a field, she collected a field that wasn't her husband's. She got something that's not his. It turns out it's not hers at all. It wasn't his to give, it wasn't hers to collect. It was found to have been stolen property. The original owners are going to come and take it away from her. Ubabal choiv meuchar shekidem v'gova komifligi. And another important facet of this case is, what is the law with regard to someone who has a later claim on a particular individual? In other words, he once loaned money to someone, whatever the nature of the financial claim is, but the date of his claim is later than someone else. So you have two people competing for funds. One has an earlier claim and one a later claim. What happens in a case where the later claimant comes and collects before the earlier claimant? Let's take a look at Rashi together at the top line. Soda Shena Shaloi, Shenoda Shegozla. It became revealed that it was a stolen field. Vesov Shavo Bailim Vitlua Mimena. And the original owner is going to come and take that field away from one of those first three ladies that happened to collect that for Ksuba. Ukshebo Revias Ligvais Ksubasa Misoda Revias. When the fourth lady comes to collect her ksuba from a fourth field, Bozu Voimedes Loimar, the earlier lady is going to come with a claim and say, Lamocher Yovua Nigzal Vitol Sodeu Miyodi, tomorrow the original owner of the field I collected is going to come and swipe it away from me. He's going to collect it from me rightfully. Vinimse Sikarachas, and I'm going to turn out to be a loser. Ritzoni shetishavi shelo govis ksubosech b'chayabal, because I'm going to end up losing out, and you who have a later date are going to end up with a legitimate ksuba payment. I want you to swear to me that you didn't already receive a ksuba payment when the husband was alive, when our husband was alive. So what is the din, as we saw in the Gemara, what is the din when a later person collects, a later date collection collects ahead of an earlier one. So let's continue in the Gemara. Tanakama Sovar, the Tanakama who said that the fourth lady doesn't have to take an oath, Mashigova Logova, that what the later person collects isn't going to stay with them. So when that fourth lady collects, and we realize that that an earlier lady loses her field, the fourth lady isn't even going to be able to hold on to her field. She's going to have to give it to that who had the earlier claim. So the fourth lady is going to, we'll say, automatically lose in a case of Nimseis Achas Mehen Sada Shena Shaloh, as it was at the top line. So if the fourth lady is going to automatically lose, there's no need for her to swear that she hadn't already received something. What difference does it make if she had or hadn't? In other words, if she had received, so she received. And if she didn't receive, she's not going to be entitled to hold on to her field anyway. The whole purpose of the oath so far is to, say, put the loser's mind to rest. But there's not going to be, the earlier lady is not going to be a loser, so she doesn't have to hear an oath from the fourth lady. Uben Nanos Sovar, Ben Nanos who says that the fourth lady has to swear, because Masha Govo Govo, if she collects a fourth field and one of the other ladies, the earlier claimants, lose their field, the fourth lady will keep her field. So the earlier lady has to hear through an oath that fourth lady didn't already receive a ksuba payment and now she's taking a double dip. Rav Nachman Omar Rabba Baravua de Kule Almo Mashigova Loigova. Rav Nachman disagrees with Shmuel and says that everyone, even Benanus, will agree that a later claimant will not be able to hold on to the property that an earlier claimant has claimed to. So the question is, according to Benanus, why does the fourth lady swear? V'ocho b'chayshinon shemo tachsif komiflagi. Before we even translate it, it appears to me that that we're dealing here with something that is rooted in psychology. And as we're dealing with, we're imposing a shvua in order to deal with an issue of, I would say it's not a purely financial issue, but it's a psychological issue. And we'll try to justify our observation by learning the Rashi in a minute. But the Gemara says that the chashash shema tachsif's tachsif is to take a field, take a piece of property, and squeeze it for everything it's worth, and not care for it. It means let it go bad. Mor Sovar Ben Nanas holds Chayshinon Shema Tachsif. If the fourth lady collects the field without taking a shvua, it creates the feeling in her mind that she isn't going to be able to hold on to her land. And Mor Sovar Lo Chayshinon Shema Tachsif. Now we didn't explain things enough. We look at Rashi together. Rashi across from here says the Kuli Alma Mashigova Logova Ushvua de Benanos Taimo Mai. What's the reason for Shvua's imposing a Shvua on that fourth lady if she's not going to even hold on to the field in a case where it's revealed that one of the earlier fields were illegitimate? The Kosovar Shemo Tachsifor Vias Hazosis Asoda Shigova. We're afraid that in a case of the division of a deceased husband's properties, if three ladies have to swear to, each one swearing to a succeeding lady, and the fourth lady doesn't have to swear, she figures the chichazio de lo mashvin law, when she sees that they're not imposing an oath on her, yoda, she knows the hodro shlishis ilua kishiyitlu mashebi yoda, that a third lady, if she loses her property, the fourth lady is going to be the one to lose. V'lo chaysho hach revias lashbuchi la'aro. And as a result of her feeling different or feeling inferior, the land that she does collect, she won't take care of it. She'll take whatever she can from it and not care for it. If the Tanakama is not concerned with that fear, so that let us assume for the time being that we're not that Rav Nachman is talking about a general situation where four ladies are collecting properties. We don't know of anyone to be illegitimate right now, but if the fourth lady sees that she's being treated differently than the others, that will create within her the fear that she might very well lose her property. Again, it's a creation, it's a mindset. She feels she might lose her property, and as a result of that, according to Ben Nanos, she's not going to care for the property. And eventually, if it turns out that one of the previous properties were legitimate, the one who's going to be getting compensated from the fourth party's property is going to be getting a piece of poorly kept land. So in order to ensure that the fourth lady cares for her land, a shvua is imposed on her to give her the feeling that she's no different than any of the earlier ladies. A third approach, Abaye Omar, the Abaye Kshisha Ikobinayu. There are two people with the same name, but one is called Abaye Kshisha, the older Abaye. So Abaye says that the opinion of Abaye Kshisha is going to be the point of difference. And here, it has nothing to do with a field discovered not to be theirs. Detoni Abaye Kshisha. Yesoimim Shomru. The Yesoimim spoken about in the Halacha, that one who comes to collect from Yesoimim, from an estate where their heirs, needs to take an oath. Gedoilim V'ein Sorach Lomak Tanim. This source says, little different than we said earlier, but it's a machlokas, you'll see, has to do with collecting from adult heirs, and it goes without saying, certainly if you're going to come to collect from minors. Minors are helpless type individuals. They're not knowledgeable whatsoever. They're only children. They don't know what's going on. So if you want to collect from them, you'll have to swear that your collection is legitimate. But this Brisa says you have to swear to collect even from adults. The Tanakama who said that the fourth lady doesn't have to swear, as we explained earlier, our Mishnah is talking about a case where you're collecting from adult Yesoimim, adult heirs. The Tanakama less lay the Abaye Kshisha. He doesn't hold from Abaye Kshisha's requirement of swearing when collecting even from adults. Ben Nanos says that the fourth lady has to swear is lay the Abaye Kshisha. He holds by Abaye Kshisha's teaching, and that even though the heirs are adults, if you're going to collect from their estate, you have to swear. Just to repeat, this has nothing to do with swearing from one lady to the other, but rather the oath, especially when dealing with the fourth lady, is by the mere fact that she's coming to collect from the estate of that's held now by the heirs. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.